The Dave McGillivray Finish Strong Foundation's goals are to inspire and empower youth across New England and beyond to increase physical activity, expand literacy, and build community and self-esteem through running, reading, and performing acts of kindness. Join us in our mission to empower youth through fitness and education. With your support, we can provide the opportunities for youth to cross their own finish line one step at a time. Together, we can build a stronger, healthier future. Go to DaveMcGillivrayFoundation.org for more information.
98.5, the Sports Hub, where Toucher and Rich and Danny Ainge now is a professional gambler living in Reno, Nevada. He has left the Boston Celtics to pursue his dream. And now Brad Stevens is the Celtics president of basketball operations, and he joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Mr. Stevens, hello, sir.
Hi, guys. You sounded disappointing, and rightfully so.
I mean, this is a big letdown, I got to tell you. Danny brought it. No, Danny was great. Not disappointed at all, but I will tell you this, Brad, is that you and I have been in the same places several times. I have a 13-year-old son, and
oh, yeah.
I have been to these basketball barns, and people will turn to me and they'll go, hey, Brad Stevens is here. You're on Sports Talk Radio. You know him? And I'll go, oh, that's how it works. Yeah, we're best friends. The media.
I'm in those places a lot. I enjoy going to those games. It's fun. Everybody always ask me if I'm there scouting, and I'm like, I probably wouldn't choose a 13 or 14 year old game here today to scout, but I'm here watching my son like everybody else.
Yeah, but you know the parents have gone like, all right, kid, Stevens is here.
That's right.
This is a showcase game for you.
All those travel basketball games you attended.
Now, yes. Did you have to drive your kid during the worst of COVID? Did you have to drive your kid like far away and then sit in the parking lot?
So, you know what was, and obviously I was in the bubble.
Oh, that's right.
A large part of that. And then last year when we were playing our season, we had such strict protocols and rules that, you know, almost luckily when he was playing high school basketball, they wouldn't let parents go anyway. So we could only watch on stream because I would not have been able to go anyways. Even in the spring AAU season last year, I did not go to any games until our season was over because of the protocols. They basically didn't want us anywhere during the season last year, masked or not. So it is nice to to be able to go again and to be able to throw I still throw my mask on in all of those settings just to be super duper safe, especially with our team, but. It's great to be able to go again and watch those kids play.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny. We were talking to guys on the Bruins, and there was a player in particular that was young and single, and COVID protocols. Because you don't, you know, you internalize things yourself, but you don't often think of athletes as, you know, regular people. And the thing was that the COVID protocols were – like affecting him mentally enough that it was affecting him on the ice. And, you know, the NBA was just as strict as the NHL was. How hard was that navigating? Cause it sucks for you, but you have a family, like, right. You have a home base. How much for these young guys that, you know, weren't around family, were isolated by themselves a lot. How difficult was that to navigate? And did that affect things, you think, on the court at all?
Oh, of course. But yeah. It wasn't just us, right? It was everybody.
Right.
And I think that was really well documented all the way through the bubble, right? So you start in the bubble and then the short turnaround and then the new season. It was my number one focus with our team last year and through the bubble just because, you know, we knew that was going to be a significant – obviously you're dealing with a pandemic and you're dealing with all of the stress and anxiety that comes with that. Cause you're not just like you, just like everyone, right? We're not just thinking about ourselves. We're thinking about how our family members are doing, how especially our older family members are doing and wanting them to be safe and all that goes with that. So there's already like a layer of stress. And then, you know, when those protocols are in place, you know, being isolated when you're just going from game to game, if you can't get away from it somehow, in your own way, everybody's got their own way of doing it. I love to go for a walk or rent a bike when I'm on the road or whatever the case may be, just to take time to get away. That was one of the challenges of, you know, over the last year and a half. But, you know, everybody was going through that, and it was all even in that regard.
Yeah,
but that was real. And I'm glad, you know, I'm glad people have talked about that, because it is like, these guys are human. They look superhuman when they're on the court, and they're amazing when they're on the court, but they are human.
Yeah, you go on walks. I went to rehab. It was a lot of – it's one and the same. We handle things the same exact way. Talking to Brad Stevens. All right, so you're coaching. That's difficult enough. You're juggling these personalities, and COVID comes into it. Like, when it comes down to now, like, you know, not being the head coach, going into the front office, was the stress of all that – I mean, the situation that you were in, it was so unprecedented – does that make the decision to go into the front office easier? Was that season so difficult that this is almost a relief?
No. So I tried to really separate, you know, like everyone else, I think I tried to take the last 2 years and say, okay, you basically have to throw those out with regard to the challenges that they presented outside of just the normal. You know, I still always, super thankful to be in the position you're in, right? Like, and to get an opportunity to coach the Boston Celtics. I have always thought, since my early 30s, I became a head coach at 30 at Butler. I had always thought that I wasn't going to be a person that coached into his late 50s, 60s, and 70s. And so, you know, I've always kind of kept an eye on what else there could be out there and when would be the appropriate time to transition. Danny approached me about retiring. He told me he was retiring, you know, in early April. And so, you know, we had a lot of talks about that. Ended up, you know, after it was all said and done, deciding, you know, after speaking to Wick and Steve and knowing the great group that we already had in place here, an opportunity presented itself that really I felt really good about. The first 2 months on this job were like nothing I've ever experienced, because, you know, it's so different than coaching. But it was, you know, and every day it's been invigorating. It's been really challenging. It's really hard. But we have great people in this building. You know, we were, the hardest part for me was when, you know, your own coaching staff, people that you have traveled with, built great relationships with, they may or may not be retained by a new coach. And that's part of the, like, the, a new coach needs to be able to bring in his own staff because of a comfort level and a feel that you need with the people that you're around. And so that was really hard, knowing that some of our assistants would ultimately be in a career flux. But they've been good, and you can turn on the TV on any given night and you see a couple of my former assistants on other benches, and we have about half of my staff still here from last year, and everybody seems to be doing well. But that was a great source of angst for me. And then, you know, hiring a new coach and trying to do our best to manage the short and long term for this team, from a dollars and cents perspective, were just a small part of it. And thank goodness I got to keep everyone else around us here, who are the real experts, and I'm learning as we go.
Oh, yeah, because you mentioned, you say the first couple months was like nothing you experienced. I mean, you jumped right into it. I mean, you didn't mess around. And on top of that, you, like you said, you'd been in a bubble with these guys. You'd been traveling with these guys, not let the players, let alone your staff. So do you think the, you know, because you made big moves, do you think a little bit more personal for you since you were so close to those guys? I know Ainge was around, and I know Ainge was, but not like you were. So was that more difficult?
Really difficult. But I think at the end of the day, and I've always thought this, sometimes you have to decide this when you're the head coach and you're deciding playing time. I mean, you don't want to have to bench somebody. You don't want guys not to play, because it affects their bottom line. It affects their careers. It may affect their next opportunity, and you're close with them and tight with them. But your ultimate responsibility is to the Boston Celtics, to, you know, the New England region, to everybody that cheers for us. And we are all a team trying to work and represent, you know, everyone as well as we can, and recognizing that everyone's got to embrace a role within that team. So when you move to the front office, I mean, these decisions are a little bit bigger because, you know, when you have to obviously sign off on a trade, I mean, it's one of the things you learn in that first trade, especially with trading Kimba, which was super hard. One of the things you learn in that is, like, it's a lot easier to be the person that throws out the ideas than the person that says, yes, we're going to do it.
Yeah.
So that was a, you know, an aha moment for me. But it's been good. Again, I've got really good people here, you know, Mike Zarin and Austin and Allison Feaster and, you know, on down the line, Dave Lewin and Remy Cofield. Like, we have the benefit of continuity in the front office has made my transition so much smoother. And so that's where I've been really fortunate. I've leaned on them and leaned on their expertise quite a bit.
So go back to those first 2 months on the job, Brad. As Fred was saying, you jumped in with both feet and you were on the job and it was crazy. How many phone calls did you get in those first 2 or 3 days? Because I would imagine other GMs would reach out to a guy like you and try and test out the new guy and see what they can and can't get away with.
You know, not a ton. I know a lot of these people, right? So, you know, whether I've been in the league now 8 years, for the people that have been in the league longer, they used to come to our college practices. So I know a lot of the people that, you know, are on trade calls for the other team. And those that I don't know, it's easy to grab a coffee with, make a phone call, see at Summer League and spend a few minutes with. They're not hard relationships to build. And I think the rest of our staff that's still here have good relationships around the league. And so I heard from a lot of people, as you know, during that time, but mostly non-basketball executives. I think they probably realized I had a lot coming, and so they let me breathe a little bit.
Hey, Brad, yeah, you mentioned the Kemba Walker trade. Obviously, you reacquired Al Horford. Kemba did speak before the game this week, saying he was a little surprised that he was traded. Can you just kind of talk about how it was hard for you and in getting Al Horford back here in Boston?
No, that was really difficult. I mean, Kimba and Al, I think if you polled people around the league and you said, okay, who are the two of the better player, veteran, older teammates in the league that are in their 30s, everyone would say Kimba and Al. So that's the kind of people that we're talking about, right? We're talking about people that teammates enjoy being around, that bring a great attitude to the game, that bring a great attitude to their work. And, you know, and as I said before, I mean, that trade was obviously, it was unbelievable to have a chance to get Al back as part of it. But the baseline of that trade was for having the financial flexibility moving forward. And so it was really more of a just thing for us from a basketball standpoint. Now, we were going to try to hold out and see if we could, you know, get a really good player back. And we just felt fortunate that Al was the one, you know, that was like, we felt like the best deal for us. And I'm really glad Al's here. I mean, Al's looked, you know, before he got sick, and he's now back the last couple of days. I don't know if he'll play tonight or not, but he's looked like he was 30. Like, he looks the same as when he came in when he was 30. He just has a quicker release on his jump shot because he shot, you know, way more than he did when he was in Atlanta. He's shot way more in the last 5 years with Boston, Philly, and OKC. So I'm excited that Al's here. I'm excited Al's here to help lead our locker room, which is really important. You saw the other night that, you know, we had a lot of great performances and a lot of relentlessness and a lot of resilience, and we could have used just a little bit, right, just a little bit to get over the top. And I don't think there's any doubt that, you know, Al can help lead that and provide that.
Unfortunately, Brad, now with your new job, you have to deal with different kinds of things, and you've always been outspoken about letting your players express themselves, but then you have something that happened in the last couple of days from Enes Kanter, who is under fire now in China after talking about the president there. And as a head coach, if you answer questions about that, you get asked one way. Now that you're the guy in charge, do you have to have a conversation with Enes about what he said, or is that something else that just kind of continues on?
Yeah, my conversation with Enes was real short and sweet, and that is, you know, we're always going to support any of our players and their right to freedom of speech and expression, you know, and I think in my experience with the Celtics and the NBA, that's the way it's been, and that's the way I'll continue to be.
Well, listen, you could be in Brooklyn or Philly.
Yeah, things are a little worse there.
Yeah, it could be worse. I mean, you could have that big headache. But there you go. Things have worked out for you, and you're not in that situation. Your players want to play. Congratulations. That's the first thing that you got going for you.
I don't know if you want me to, like, have a reaction to that.
No, that's just a statement,
it's nice. It's just nice. Like, everyone showed up. Like, it's nice.
Let me do my best Danny impersonation. He'd listen to the question and he'd just go, right.
Yes, exactly. Yes, perfect. And then we'd ask him if he farted or something. He would go on his business. All right. Brad Stevens, who is very fortunate all his players did show up, no matter what he says, is the Celtics president of basketball operations. Thank you so much for the time, sir, and best of luck. We appreciate it.
All right, guys. Be well.
The Dave McGilvery Finish Strong Foundation's goals are to inspire and empower youth across New England and beyond to increase physical activity, expand literacy, and build community and self-esteem through running, reading, and performing acts of kindness. Join us in our mission to empower youth through fitness and education. With your support, we can provide the opportunities for youth to cross their own finish line one step at a time. Together, we can build a stronger, healthier future. Go to DaveMcGilveryFoundation.org for more information.